And that sound means it's the start of the 62nd Missile for the Masses. I am your host, Gary, and this is the Chaplain's Assistance Motor Pod, a podcast where I can talk about what's going on in my life of collecting, what's going on in G.I. Joe and other related comic books, like Energon Universe from Skybound, so that includes G.I. Joe, Transformers, and Void Rivals, and also where I review a toy, a vehicle, playset, or even a trailer from the G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero toy line from 1982 to the present day, mostly focusing on the O-ring toys from the original 13 years. And this missile is coming quite a bit after the last one. February was spent with a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of things going on in home and work and just doing a lot of different things. What's going on in my life of collecting is really just trying to enjoy what I have and also trying to make room for other things. My biggest thing is I'm still working on a car project, and it's coming along. It's costing a lot of money. So if anybody ever complains about the price of a Goldhead Steel Brigade, I will just laugh in their face because I've spent multiples of that one figure over and over and over again the past couple months. Either way, not here to complain about that, just the reality of what's going on. And the other thing is, in preparation for this, I have signed up to do my first toy show and vend at a first toy show some of my overflow of collection, things that I've come to realize, while, you know, sometimes it does spark joy to have 11 Hiss tanks. And that is one thing that I have reduced down to a modest number of 5. Might be going down to 3, but still, it's things like that. You know, my Canadian Mauler, I've decided that I'm not going to pursue finishing it with the correct Robertson screws. You know, I have some extra figures here and there. Finally, you know, and even comic books, it's a comic and collectible. And I've already put together like 3 long boxes, and I probably have a 4th one and 5th one working on getting all that together and labeling and pricing. It's been a huge undertaking, you know, looking up stuff, you know, doing a little bit of research, and then also trying not to belabor the point, as the whole point of getting rid of things is to actually get rid of it and not trying to squeeze every little last penny out, because the clock is ticking and, you know, the guy has his hand out looking for a pay. So I got to do the same thing. It's just a challenging time. I've never really sold collectibles before. G.I. Joe would be like on eBay and stuff. And that eBay's great. I like to list at 99 cents and let it ride. I've never really tried to eke out every last penny. Sometimes it's been good for me. You know, I've made a lot of money on certain things that I didn't expect to get. And other times it has bit me in the posterior. So it works both ways. I like to think it's usually a fair way to get something to someone. And right now it's just, you know, things like carded figures are going to be hard to sell online. I've already gotten scammed once. You know, selling that Frostbite on eBay, while I did manage to not lose the money that was scammed, the flip side is, you know, I still got scammed. And I don't feel like getting scammed in that way again. It's just, I'm just getting a little afraid from some of my more higher priced items. The other thing, too, is I also have some larger items I don't really want to have to deal with the logistics of shipping. So things like my Incomplete Terror Drome and my G.I. Joe Pit, which is kind of sort of sealed, and I don't really have a motivation to open up. You know, it's big things like that. It's just, it's time to move on. It's time to create room for other things and just raise funds to pay for my very expensive car. And just to plug it a little bit, so if you're in the New Haven area on April 21st, it's the New Haven Comic and Collectible Show, and I'll be there, and I'll be in my Chaplain's Assistance Motorpod t-shirt, and just say hi. And if there's anything that tickles your fancy, please buy it. I could use the money. All right. And what else is going on? I have gotten the omnibus for The Art of Collecting G.I. Joe by Carson Metaxas. It is a hefty beast. It is so large. I haven't even really taken the time to open it up and look at it, which is a real shame. I've leafed through the first couple of chapters just marveling at the amount of work. I saw this at Joe Fest and I paced myself a little bit. And I spent about the same amount of time as Joe Fest looking at it as I did at home. All I can say is it is a fantastic job. If Carson Metaxas still has some and you're interested in this thing, it is definitely an expensive book at, I think, around $150. But the other side, too, is you get $150 worth of artwork in this book. It is hefty. It is featured. It's a monumental task. He really did it justice. There's a couple things here and there that, you know, I know the Tiger Rat has a printing issue on it. But overall, it really... it's as close as perfect as any one human can get it. And it's only going to exist this once. And, you know, God bless them for doing the Kickstarter, getting everybody to back it, of which I was. And it's monumental. And I do look forward to, you know, looking at it more. But it's like literally so big, it doesn't fit on a bookshelf. It doesn't fit anywhere. And that's what makes it hard for me to enjoy it, because it's just so big. But I love it. It's really good. And in other Kickstarter items, things that have come in, Skeletron delivered the 4-inch and 3 3/4-inch O-ring figures. I got the Direwolf and the Skeletron in 4-inch form. I have left them in the package. I don't know what I'm going to do there. I'm keeping them right now because obviously I'm still waiting for my RoboSkull Mark II, but I did get two of the O-ring figures and the Skeletron and Wolf Trooper O-ring figures are just, I will say this, it is as Grindstone Toys doing Call Sign Longbow and having this O-ring figure, it is like, it's a little bit different than holding an original O-ring G.I. Joe. You can tell the different texture of plastic, so you know it's made differently. But it is also seamless in experience. And I mean that in the highest compliment possible. The details are top-notch without being in that super ultra-realistic 4-inch aesthetic. It is... the swivel wrists are a welcome addition. The head swapping action, I laughed at the gimmick. It's funny how they presented it with, you know, screwdriver needed, but it is well done. The only thing I noticed that was a little bit different was the ball neck. It is really just a pivot up and down. It doesn't have too much movement. And then the swivel action of the head is in the neck itself. So it is not like the old school ball necks. It's a little bit of a different interpretation of that. But the swivel wrists are awesome. Now the weapon storage, storing the pistol in the back, the sword in the backpack, and the little like cleaver double spike thing also goes in the backpack, only leaving really the gun not really having a super storage way of the figure. Still, it's ingenious and it works so well. He looks at home with my Targat. The helmet moves for the Wolf Trooper. It's overall, it's just a 100% awesome, complete experience figure. And it really excites me for the Call Sign Longbow figures that one day they will come. And it really adds to my little action figure lore. The one thing is I did pose them with my ROM figure. And because, you know, they're space, you know, who doesn't love a little space action, you know, Star Brigade. And it is what it is, I guess. I love them. It makes me really excited to see the future of O-Ring coming into my mailbox, as it's already been paid for. Now, going to go into a quick review of Transformers 4 and 5, catching up on this, but I'm also going to announce that this is probably the last time on the podcast I'm going to do a review of Transformers, and also I'm going to be not reviewing Void Rivals as well. A couple things for that is I'm just going to concentrate more on the G.I. Joe titles, because right now the Energon universe has 4 ongoing titles, and they may be switching them up from time to time, as we see with the 2 G.I. Joe miniseries. So right now, between Void Rivals, Transformers, and the 2 G.I. Joe, that's 4 books. And then on top of that, my first love, G.I. Joe Real American Hero, is still going on. So that's 5 series to do reviews on. And as a mostly singular podcast, it's hard for me to keep up with that. And rather than just being overwhelmed by having to do essentially book reports, because I want to be prepared and I want to do a good job, and I also want to do minimal editing, this is going to be my last time talking about in depth of one of the Void Rivals or Transformers titles. I might still talk about them, but it's going to be a much more quicker, like, summary, and if I like them or not. No ratings, nothing of in-depth nature. With that, just go over Transformers 4 and 5, because I want to at least catch up before I end what I'm doing. And Transformers number 6 will be the last issue with Daniel Warren Johnson's art. And I'll talk a little bit about that at the end. But I've gone down to only collecting the A covers of Transformers. And also, probably at the same time, we'll be doing just the A covers of Void Rivals, unless there's a really cool variant, of course, as any collector would say, and then, you know, start down that rabbit hole again. But issue number 4 and issue number 5, the main covers are both done by Daniel Warren Johnson. Issue number 4 has Optimus Prime with Wheeljack and Cliffjumper, and it's kind of funny to have Wheeljack because he really wasn't doing too much in the issue. And issue number 5, it's Optimus Prime reaching with his right hand to grab Megatron's fusion cannon. And we remember from issue number 3 that Optimus Prime lost his right arm in the battle with Skywarp. So that's what's going on. They're good covers. I'm not going to say they're the best covers ever. Like, I'm going to buy solely based on the cover. But as a Transformers fan, you know, issue number 4, you know, who doesn't love the good guys? And with issue number 5, you know, why is Optimus Prime with wide eyes that you see in the reflection of the fusion cannon, why is he reaching for Megatron's weapon? So that's more of an intriguing cover than anything. That 5th issue cover really would draw me in as a fan of the Transformers, or at least somebody that is pop cultural knowledgeable about the Transformers. So a little summary of what's going on in those issues. Daniel Warren Johnson is the writer and artist. Mike Spicer is the colorist, and Russ Wooten is the letterer. And Transformers number 4 opens with Starscream tracking Optimus Prime, where he tells Skywarp he will come back to help him. Optimus reaches out to Ratchet as he races to get Spike to the hospital while being pursued by Starscream. Cliffjumper manages to knock Starscream down, and Optimus runs the Seeker over. As Cliffjumper and Optimus arrive at the hospital, Starscream has called Soundwave for backup, and he arrives with Rumble in tow. The surprise attack catches the Autobots off guard, and in the middle of their beatdown, Starscream decides to torture Optimus by attacking the hospital itself. Autobot reinforcements finally arrive as Ratchet, towing Optimus's trailer, and Jazz join the fray. Jazz single-handedly shoots Starscream and pile-drives Soundwave, which emboldens all 4 Autobots, and the Decepticons retreat. this leads to the first slower moment in the entire Transformers series as Optimus contemplates what to do about the damaged hospital as lives, human lives, hang in the balance. So Optimus makes the decision to use the Matrix of Leadership to repower the hospital. Soundwave and Starscream return to the Ark with Skywarp, and Starscream wants to repair the Decepticons. More importantly, he needs repairs. And the other thing, too, is Starscream has some of the more minimal damage of all the Decepticons, but that, you know, that's Starscream's ego and hubris. The materials to repair the Decepticons only exist in Cybertronian technology, and with Soundwave saying that, Soundwave and Starscream both look at Skywarp, you know, in that almost fourth wall breaking thing, and in a truly horrific decision, in the very horror-esque, start tearing Skywarp apart limb by limb. We go back to the hospital, and it's time for reflection on past events. Optimus talks to Sparkplug, Jazz, and Ratchet about the next steps. Cliffjumper and Carly bond over similar losses caused by this Transformers war. We then end this scene with Optimus Prime talking about going back on the offensive, replacing his missing right arm with that of Megatron's. Fusion Cannon is still attached. We close out with Starscream still ripping apart other damaged Decepticons, declaring himself again their leader, with the final page, a splash page, that of Megatron frozen in the ice with his right arm missing. For more on that, you know, you can go back to Cobra Commander number one. I covered that with Joel from Order of Battle a missile or two ago. Issue number five opens up with a sequence of alternating flashbacks of Sparkplug and Optimus Prime, featuring them witnessing their teammates getting wounded, killed, and their subsequent rise to action. They are talking about the respective wars they fought together. We move back to the Decepticons with Skywarp's corpse providing the necessary elements for the Decepticons to start repairing themselves. They discover the Autobots have also found their energy source, a dam. Wheeljack has built a generator. Now, this is only half of Wheeljack. Has built a generator to generate the energy to repair the Autobots, and Optimus chooses to repair their warriors first instead of himself. RC is revived just in time for the Decepticons' attack. Reflector is part of this. Reflector is also depicted as one character instead of three, like the mail away. He speaks using puns, the ISO, like the ISO frame rate, or the length of time of the aperture opening. And he is also the first to fall, being shot by Megatron's fusion cannon being wielded by Optimus Prime. And in a seemingly fluid follow-up, Optimus grabs Frenzy by the leg and whips him down, effectively curb-stomping the cassette. Carly gets caught in the open by Thundercracker, and she topples over the side of the dam, only for RC to transform and save her. And while Cliffjumper admires her rescue, Rumble is sneaking up on him again, only to be saved by a now-revived Jazz. We finally get Starscream, and he's mad that Optimus is wielding the fusion cannon. He dodges Optimus's initial blast to take out Wheeljack's generator. However, that leaves him open to Optimus, and he blasts Starscream and the Decepticons' retreat. Optimus is confident of their superior numbers, and he launches a counteroffensive to retake the Ark, where the Decepticons have retreated to. Carly wants to come with Optimus says no, but Cliffjumper snags her and tells her, keep her head down. As they arrive to the Ark, we get a flashback of Sparkplug talking to a Jimmy, possibly his other son, but the memory is interrupted by an explosion. And then Optimus is broadsided by a heavy earth mover. Subsequently, Ratchet is attacked by a bucket loader, and RC and Jazz are pushed by a bulldozer. Starscream reveals his master plan, that he knew the Autobots would follow him back, and now he has the Constructicons. More importantly, Devastator. Now, things that I love about the Transformers is it is really a no-holds-barred slugfest. I mean, this is kids' imaginations, creating battles, really taking this you know, kicking it up a notch. And overall, it's actually pretty violent, but it's not gratuitous. It is essentially what I would call playtime between an 8 to 12-year-old in the 1980s. It's nothing that I would see, nothing that I would say would be out of character for that time period or out of character for that mindset. You know, Starscream ripping apart Skywarp was very horror movie-esque, and it really made the Decepticons evil. It really made Starscream evil. And, you know, right now there's no, you know, it's a clear white hat, black hat type of story. Optimus Prime is really acting in the interest of the greater good. You know, he's putting others before himself. He's acting like a true leader. And he's also making mistakes, you know, so it's like he's not perfect, but obviously, you know, neither are the Decepticons. And, you know, we still haven't gotten Megatron back, and he will be coming back. I mean, the previews, I'm actually staying away from previews now because I don't want to be spoiled by cover images and, you know, issue descriptions, because I really like the sense of being surprised by the Energon universe. The other thing is, I know issue number 6 is Daniel Warren Johnson's last issue, and since the first issue, either I have gotten more used to his art, or he's gotten more used to drawing the Transformers, because some of what I would call, like, the first two issues with, like, things that I didn't like about the perspective he was using, I don't see as much. I see a lot more cohesive narrative. I mean, the layouts have always been great, but it's more cohesive artistically, and things are more, you know, they make more sense to my eye. But they're still done really well in his style, and I really am overall enjoying the Transformers book. I really can't think of too many detractors, so it's a really good book. It's a really fun read. It is definitely robots battling it out, and, you know, it's a good time. Well, with that, that covers the Transformers, and I'm trying to keep it quick so I could do another quick missile after this for the Energon universe, and I'm going to try to do some things here. So overall, the Energon universe is pumping really well, and I'll talk more about the G.I. Joe, and I'll talk more about the Duke and Cobra Commander series on the next missile.
Back to G.I. Joe.
So I'm going to close out this episode by talking about my quick little trip to the Manchester Toy and Comic Show, Manchester, Connecticut. Went there at time of recording. I went there yesterday with my son. He was looking to spend some time with dad, and I was looking to go to the show to meet Ron Rudat. So he wanted to come, and I'm like, well, I want a, you know, great little father-son time. So with my son in tow, we went up there and we walked in, and, you know, I paid my $5 and my son got in free because he's under 10. And we walked around and my big thing was to get to Ron Rudat, who is all the way in the far corner from the entrance, and just, you know, look at a couple things, you know, get an idea of what's going on in the world of collecting, and to get out of the house and talk to other people with similar interests. So we get in and, you know, find out where Ron is at the far corner. So I got to walk all the way around. Not an issue. It's a small local show. So it was crowded. It was packed, but it wasn't to the point of, like, major conventions waiting in, you know, huge lines. You know, when we get to Ron, the wait wasn't offensive. But before I get to Ron, I got to talk a little bit about that journey. And it was getting in there, walking in, looking at a couple tables. We walked down the middle aisle, and basically because I'm following my son, and at that point, he was looking for Beyblades, fidget spinners, And that's really what he had on his mindset. He also had toy cars on his little list, and that's fine. I had a, you know, $50 little limit on him, and as long as he didn't spend over that, I was cool. And I really wasn't there to spend a lot of money. What, knowing me, that doesn't go well. First thing I do, we walk in, walking down the middle aisle, and I see a tan Vamp on this guy's little vehicle bucket near the floor. So first thing I do, I pick it up. It's like, this is not the right tan of a Vamp Mark II. And it says, I think this is the mail-away. It's a Vamp V1 in like a light tan, almost like, you know, 1984's Grunt. Flip it upside down, and there it is, plain as day, 1988 Brazil. It's a mail-away Vamp Mark II. Now, mind you, it's basically a shell. It's missing the roof. It's missing the steering wheel. It's missing the gas cans. And it's missing the missile rack. And, of course, the missiles. But the push bar is there. The gas can rack is there. And this thing is clean. Almost like the kid never assembled it. There's not even where the missile rack goes. So the keyway is still nice there. So I don't say a thing. You know, I'm holding, you know, I'm playing poker, right? And I asked the guy, I says, how much for this? And he goes, $10. And I says, okay, that was easy. And then my son's like, ooh, Pokemon cards. And wasn't planning on Pokemon, but here we go. So my son picked out a few birds. He all of a sudden, so birds would be the theme of my son's adventures at the toy show. And he gets some bird Pokemon. Guy looks at, you know, the few that my son brought. You know, it's $5. All right, here you go. And we move on to the next thing. So we walk around and and my son's like, ooh, more Pokemon and this and that. And I'm like, hey, remember, you wanted Beyblades and you wanted fidget spinners and, you know, maybe a toy car. And he's like, yeah, okay. Well, and I says, let's walk around first and we'll take a look at everything. So walking around and we get there and then we get to Ron Rudad's table and he's hanging out there. And it's a little bit of a line. And I said, so well, let's go walk past because it was kind of like a congregation around there. So you didn't know if the line was from the right, if the line was from the left. So we walked past. I was like, okay, you know, there he is. Ron was there with his wife. So we walk past and we keep looking around. You know, there's some guys with G.I. Joes. One guy had a bunch of totes of, you know, everything from 82 to 94, all in Mark totes, which was, that's my thing. Organization is key. I think that is, you know, I know there's some vendors that don't organize. To me, I'm an organized person. Like if I sell things, I want them to be organized, but also I am more inclined to go to a table that, oh, I'm looking for 1990s figures. So I know which two buckets to go through. So it made it a lot easier for me to go there. So didn't see anything, but just saw a few things on the top. And I make a mental note. And we go down the last two aisles. And then we go back and then we start waiting in line for Ron. So we're waiting in line for Ron. And then we start talking to his wife. And, you know, just nice chit chat. And then we get there. And my son's pulling on my sweatshirt. And he's going, you know, let's get the one of the prints. And I'm like, okay, well, which print do you want? And this is really, and I do mean this is out of character for my son. He's definitely not an action figure person. Although one day he kind of played action figures with chess pieces. So I know the creative juices are flowing. But anyway, so tangent back to Ron. So my son sees a print of Shipwreck with Polly. And remember, my son's really in this bird mode today. And I'm like, okay. So, and he goes, Dad, you know, because there's, you know, one guy talking to Ron at this point. And he goes, can we get it, you know, for us? And I says, oh, absolutely. It's like, you know, I mean, you know, my heart's growing in size like the Grinch on Christmas. It's like, wow, this is great. We pick out the Shipwreck, and Ron makes it out to my son and I. it was really cool because, you know, had a nice little conversation, you know, got his contact information. So I'll contact him later about a commission. I really would like to get an Airtight by the guy who designed Airtight. And it's lovely artwork. He had a whole bunch of characters there, like a Viper and, you know, Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, naturally. And, you know, it was nice. Had a nice little conversation and stuff. So we go around and now we start looking for other things. And my son, obviously, going back to the Pokemon, because that's really all that they had there that was his interest. And I'm looking at G.I. Joe figures. And so there was a couple tubs by this one guy who had Pokemon figures and G.I. Joes. And I'm like, well, let me look through what he has. And the prices were reasonable. Nothing, I would say, normal priced. And I picked up a couple Royal Guards because now that Cobra Law is in the comic books, I got to collect, you know, a couple more army builders there. I only had, when I did my picture for Cobra Commander 1, I only had two Cobra Law Royal Guards, and the comic had three of them. And I was kind of bummed. I was like, wait a second, there were three in the book, and now I can only take a picture with two. You know, it's like, I kind of felt like, you know, I was missing out. So I picked up two more Royal Guards, and one of them came with his pistol, and the other one came with his sword. So I got one mostly complete Royal Guard for buying two. Now, I was looking at the other figures the guy had. He had a, it looked really decent, version 2 of Destro from 1988. And I noticed that the gold head was starting to discolor like one that I had. And I was like, oh, I really wanted to get it because I really want to have a really nice version to Destro. And I have one that's reasonably good. But I wanted one that was even better than that. But I'm not sure what's going on with the gold plastic there. So I passed on that Destro. But I did manage to get a Iron Grenadier with no weapons for $10 from the same guy. And that ended it for me there for that gentleman. And my son, of course, got more Pokemon cards from this vendor. So we're walking away and we're going around to, you know, other booths. And I'm just trying to make quick work of it. My son's like, he's getting tired of it pretty quick. He had, you know, we find some more Pokemon cards. And then we're walking around and then I see, and this is a guy I have plenty of, is Cross Country. But this one had a really nice file card. And it was, I'm going to definitely say I overspent on this because of the experience. But I wanted the file card and because I wanted to go back to Ron. I wanted to get Ron Rudat to sign the Cross Country file card because of reading about Ron in the books, you know, creating G.I. Joe and, you know, the other stuff. You know, I've learned that Ron is a huge Civil War enthusiast. He was a Civil War reenactor. And because of that, whenever I see Cross Country, I always think back to Ron Rudat. I associate Ron more with Cross Country than I do with Dusty, you know, Tatter, you know, Rudat backwards, or Leatherneck, you know, actually molded based on Ron Rudat's face. So I got the file card. I paid way too much money for that. And I went back to Ron's booth and I got another signature from him on the file card. So I'm really excited to, you know, put that into my collection. To me, it's significant. I'm starting to shy away from being an autograph collector, but I do want to have where somebody was meaningful to something, I want to have at least one signature. I don't want to just, you know, have Ron sign all the file cards that he created, but have Ron sign, you know, to me, Cross Country was significant. So I'm really happy to add that to my personal collection. The last vendor I bought something from was the guy that had the Joes and the Tubs, because I do want to fill out my 1991 to 1994 collection, and I'm really, really 92 to 94 now, and I'm getting to the point where, again, I'm not trying to build a collection, and this is like, you know, caught up in the moment, I guess. I ended up getting another 1990s, you know, the green Headhunter from the end of the line. I got a Star Brigade Sci-Fi, and I got a complete Star Brigade Duke because my Star Brigade Duke has a broken backpack. So I wanted to get one with an intact backpack. So now it's one more, you know, thing off the list. You know, I do have figures I don't want to get. All of the Street Fighter line. I don't want to get the Armor Tech characters. To me, I'm glad they exist for somebody, but that's where I am walking away from having the complete collection. So other than three Dinobots, because I wanted to upgrade my Grimlock, mine developed an issue after I recorded an issue of the Pint, and then I got Slag and Snarl, the Triceratops, and I know this is wrong, but the Brontosaurus. So I got a couple more Dinobots, and you know, with Transformers talking about that, fits the theme of the show. So, and that was it. It was a nice little trip. It was a great day out. My son had fun. He got about, you know, 40 Pokemon cards of all different birds there, a couple energies, you know, everything was like cheap. So he had a blast. You know, I had fun, you know, got to meet some people, got to have some interesting conversations. So it was great getting out. It was energizing. It was something I needed, and glad I went, and I'll probably go next year. So that concludes this Missile for the Masses. Thank you for listening. I've been your host, Gary. And if you would like more Chaplain's Assistance Motorpod, feel free to look me up and follow me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and X, formerly Twitter. You can also email me, ChaplainJoePod@gmail.com. And you can find the Chaplain's Assistance Motorpod on all your major podcatchers, Spotify, our host. And if you rate, review, or comment, or whatever, you can interact with the podcast on your podcast player. That only helps grow and improve the podcast. I do enjoy reading everything from all the listeners out there. The Chaplain's Assistance Motorpod is a strange but not as strange nerdy little brother of the Pint, a pop culture podcast. And with all of that out of the way, one final missile for the masses: be decent to each other.